Hello, and welcome to Gamer Heroes Podcast with GGKC. This is episode 64. We have the whole crew here today. I'm John, as you know. We also have Michael and Thomas and Josh.
Hey.
Hello.
Hola.
So, how was everybody's weekend?
Good. Man, I played a bunch of more video games than I usually do.
That's a positive.
It's a great positive, yeah. But I felt like shit. That's why I went home sick, so that's why I got extra video game time. You win some, you lose some.
I still sort of feel bad when I play games when I'm sick because of, you know, when you're raised and you, like, play hooky or whatever, your mom doesn't let you play video games because you're supposed to be sick, mm-hmm. right? So now I'm like, man, I'm supposed to be sick.
Is it like I know, you're just sick, so you're supposed to be in prison?
I just still have guilt.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. If you're not so sick you can't play video games, then you're not so sick you can't go to school. That makes sense, right?
Mm. Sometimes your body aches.
Yeah. You guys didn't grow up in my household.
Yeah, I remember specifically there was one time I was watching Lost at home. I was deep into like some good episodes. My mom came home and she's like, "You can't watch this. You're sick." I'm like, "Wait, those have nothing to do with each other." She's like, "Just what you said." She's like, "If you're good enough to watch Lost, you're good enough to go to school." And I'm like, yeah. "Okay, I'll go to my bed.
I'm just going to go to school and spread my sickness around."
I mean, it really just kind of sounds like to be sick, you need to feel guilt. So, I mean, you were succeeding with that. So maybe it was a...
Man.
You know...
Oh.
I got to go. I got to go cry.
Dude, if my biggest issue is like, I want to lay down when I feel sick. Because, well, especially my couch setup right now. It's not optimal at all. I'm either hurting my back or my neck in the way that I sit on it.
Yeah.
If I could lay down, turn my monitor sideways and play laying down, that would just fix all my problems.
I bet the technology exists.
It definitely exists. I just need a different monitor.
I do remember when I got my first Game Boy with Pokemon Red. I exponentially increased my sick days.
Yeah. Yep.
What a coincidence.
And, you know, now people will take off time from work when, you know, a game they're highly anticipating comes out. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, go enjoy it. But I haven't even had a game that I've anticipated enough in a long time to like, schedule my vacation around it. The one I recall, and this was many years ago, was Warhammer Online. Mm. I was so ready for it. I took a couple days off. Yeah.
I am still... disappointed.
Yes.
I'm disappointed that it died out. It was a good game.
I watched all of like the dev videos before the release. Yeah. I spent 2 years following this game and then it released, and you know, for what it was when it released, fine, whatever. It was still good enough for me because I love the Warhammer universe. So I was gonna be happy with it no matter what, on one condition. Release all of the fucking classes.
Yeah.
They couldn't even do that.
That was a big problem.
What was it?
They teased it. So it was trying really hard to not be a WoW clone, right? In an age of WoW clones. And
just want to point out, we are the Warhammer podcast. We haven't had an episode. We haven't talked about Warhammer.
Well, if Mike or I am here,
it's going down.
Then we're
going
to talk about Warhammer.
Just a great world.
So
I'm learning.
This was, did you ever play Rift?
I did. Played about 2 years of Rift.
So Rift definitely built on some things that I think Warhammer Online introduced. So the idea that you could just walk into an area and join an ongoing quest that was public and it was very real time. People could see it from a long ways away and join if they wanted to. It had multiple stages that you could hop in and out of.
Yeah, so the idea is it wasn't just instance. It was live. It was ongoing. Your rifts that would open, everyone could join and battle those rifts.
Yep.
Were the rifts like public events, like in an Elder Scrolls Online, they have like the anchors that fall down?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was exactly the same thing. It was public quests. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. It was really fun. And that was one of the primary ways you leveled up. You know, mm-hmm. you still got some of your traditional quests, like go here, fetch this. But joining these things, and they were so different from zone to zone. And there were so many zones. You know, if you wanted to start a new character, you could go a whole different route. But the biggest problem was they'd spent 2 years hyping up this release, and then something like a third of the classes that were supposed to cut release with the game, and maybe even entire races. I think orcs were...
No, the races were all there. Okay. It was just certain classes weren't released.
Yeah. So, you know, in this universe, you really know your races and their different, you know, models and stuff. So to not have some things, it really hurts the players. Yeah. They're like, oh, I was only interested in if I could play the Bright Wizard, and I can't play the Bright Wizard.
And the big thing was, like, so if you're selecting a certain race, you may be part of a certain faction, but you're still starting out in that starting area. So you're just starting out with those races. So if you release the game and your race's tank isn't even released yet, then like you're running around with a bunch of people that don't even have tanks yet. So you can't, I don't know. It did not mesh well.
Yeah. Did they not make that clear when
it was like right before release? They're like, oh, by the way, we're going to cut these so we can get this out the door.
Yep.
And they added them later. But
by the time they released it,
they lost everyone. Half their player base.
Yeah, everyone lost their.
Man, it sounds like that really created a rift between.
Ooh,
yeah,
yo.
Yeah.
Anyway, we can talk about that game through a whole podcast. Maybe sometime when Josh and Thomas are out,
Mike and I will just
talk about Warhammer.
I'm going to be here and I'm going to ask questions. That's what I'm going to do. In fact, that's not a bad idea for a bonus podcast because I would like to hear about all this.
Oh yeah, it was a fantastic. In fact, you can actually, if anybody's interested, there is a community that has released it on private servers like many other things. The Mythic is gone now, right?
What's
or
that?
Absorbed into EA, or I'm not sure.
Mythic is very much
dead. Yeah, so I don't think there's anybody even left to combat the existence of these private servers. So you can actually go play the game, and it still has a lot of fun. I did it a couple of years ago.
It's just...
It's a little old now.
Yeah, it is. It's the age... It shows its age. It's just like... I don't know if you go back and try to play Lord of the Rings online or something. I know there's still plenty of people that play that game.
That's got a huge following.
That's a big one still. It's actually a lot like going back and playing Star Wars Galaxies.
Neverwinter?
Oh, God.
Which oh, gosh. Star sucks. Wars Galaxies.
It was great at the time. And that's a whole other episode. So what else have you guys been playing? I've been playing some, as per the usual, World of Warships. I want to talk a little bit about it. They're releasing some big changes to the game, and I kind of want to discuss, you know, how developers approach that and how the community reacts. What about you, Mike?
So this weekend was a fantastic weekend because I got to play Talisman, which we talked a little bit about last week. And that was part of the reason why we played it this weekend was because just talking about it made us need to play it. So,
I've got the itch.
Yeah. So, but on top of that, we got one of the new, not a new expansion, but one of the expansions for the game. So we got to try out some new functionality of the game. And it was pretty fun.
What about you, Thomas?
I played a bunch of stuff this weekend, including a little bit of Ratchet and Clank, some Fallout, some random titles across PlayStation.
You definitely didn't play any Overwatch, right?
Actually, I did not. Whoa. I might be mostly off the train. I'll probably hop in for a little bit of stuff here and there, but I've in the past, like, 3 or 4 weeks, I've had a pretty bad experience getting on there, like, the general skill level seems to have dropped dramatically. I don't know if there are a lot of people coming back to the game.
Yeah.
But
they had a free weekend recently, right?
I think so.
Which
that
usually
sounds right.
leads to a little bit of a spike in people picking up.
Yeah, people
up
come
the
back
game.
And pick it up for a bit. But that's okay. I mean, I don't love it, but that's not a big deal. It's that people are being real toxic again, where if I have a main and a character, they will not let me play my role. Mm. And, you know, I keep queuing up as damage, and the people don't like the damage characters I have, so they'll just be like, oh, no, I saw your profile, you're out of here. And I'm just like, what? And people are just being jerks to me about, you know, not picking what they want, and just old stuff that had mostly gone away when Looking for Group had come out, and it's all back. So I just, right now, until that changes, I'm not really interested in playing again. I might be off that train for good, because it's just been overwhelmingly negative.
Don't let Blizzard hear you.
Well, it's still a good game. If I can get a crew to play with, and quick play's fun still.
That has been my biggest struggle, is that I want to play it more competitively, but I need a group of people at my skill level to do it with.
Well, hey, actually, I could play it on PC.
Oh,
I just got a bunch of
parts
from...
Then you'd still be better than me.
Maybe. But, I mean, that's the best way to get better is to play with better people. And I got a bunch of parts to a computer from Josh, Josh Flowers. Mm. Now I need a few things. I can't remember. I need like a case. I need
that's important.
Yeah, but I got necessary. Most of like the important parts. So the rest of it is easy, as far as I am told.
2019 year of Thomas on a gaming PC. Everyone,
hey.
You heard it here first,
dude. I'm excited because I have a Vive in a box sitting there unused, so I cannot wait to use that thing. But I will have a PC, so I do like Overwatch enough that I could buy that again on PC as long as I had people to play with.
I bought it twice. It's not expensive anymore.
I'd play with you guys if you play.
All right, all right, all right. Maybe I'm back in.
They're doing a Torb rework.
They are. It's very exciting.
Josh, what are you playing?
So, besides WoW,
yep.
I did jump back on, so I don't know if you guys know this, but Wizards of the Coast released MTG Arena.
Oh, no.
I got the alpha access, and they just, I think they are going or just going to beta and open beta. And you know what? It's awesome. Because I loved Hearthstone, and I love what they did Hearthstone. I think that Magic the Gathering, they had their old Magic the Gathering online, right? Mm-hmm. Just kind of plain, just cards sliding left and right. But with MTG Arena, you start getting the graphical additions, moves, and just really, really helps you learn the game. The old style MTG Online, you really had to know how to play the game in order to play the game. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't teach you very well. It never did. You're an expert and know everything when it taps, when to tap. It doesn't tell you that you needed to tap. Like, this really helped me because I've been out of the MTG scene for a while. But getting into the arena, once I got the access, it just guided me through. And they give you a bunch of starting cards and decks from the new seasons. Mm-hmm. So it was really cool. I made a pirate deck, red-black pirate deck. It was great. It was fun. I'm pretty excited. I think I might going to spend more time playing the MTG Arena
game. That makes me want to play.
It's awesome. It is quite fun.
That sounds good.
I have played so much Magic Duels. my biggest problem with it is that before Duels, they started to do the year thing where they'd release a new version every year. And it was like, why would I ever spend money on this?
Right. Yeah, it made no sense.
Just waste my collection every year. It's stupid.
Yeah, yep. I bought the only one I've ever bought digitally, because I don't even play that much Magic the Gathering. Anyway, I don't own a single card. was MTG 2014. Mm-hmm. I played that on Xbox 360, and I enjoyed it well enough, but I definitely didn't understand how the whole model worked. Because like you're saying, it's like, what, do I start over every time?
Yep.
You know, do I pay for stuff? Like, do any of the cards I have in real life matter? And yeah, it's just an unusual model. I mean, I'm glad people have fun with it, but it's confusing to me.
Yeah, when I heard they were putting Arena together, I was like, can we just stick with Arena from now on, please?
Right.
Is this the model
they go forward with? Because it actually is great. It's awesome. I always wish, as you said, kind of like in the new Pokemon, you can take your cards and put them into the Pokemon Online trading card universe. I wish they would do that with Magic. I don't want to be able to trade. I don't think you're going to get as much value. I think they're concerned with trading cards online, right? So they don't do it. But really, all your tournaments are really physical cards. I think just allowing them to have them digitally would be a bonus, and it would actually boost sales, I think. Because if I could buy a physical set and then implement them online as well, so I can, you get the most fun playing physically with your friends, right? But if you want to practice, Thomas here with the dirty mind. Maybe I have the dirty mind. You're thinking dirty, right? but I think that's the idea. I think it'd be a cool win for them if they found a way to implement that. That'd be awesome.
The thing I actually intended to talk about, which I'll see how we look for time at the end to see if I talk about it this week or another time, but on Friday, I played Fallout Survival Mode and died 3 times to some junk, just some crap. I was standing in some oil I didn't know about and died. Lost like 30 minutes a game times in a row. So after that, I was like, okay, I'm not playing Fallout for a minute. Need something else. Well, I found out that I bought What Remains of Edith Finch sometime on a sale a while ago, which came out last year. Great reviews. It's like a walking simulator.
Sorry, what?
do you know what a walking simulator is?
No. I'm taking it very literally right now.
It's what it is.
Oh, okay.
It's, it used to be used as like a negative term, but it's a game where basically there's no action. You just walk through a world and follow a narrative to uncover a story. Usually things are read out loud to you or you hear people speak. Like the one that really broke in the genre was Gone Home, which I still...
was amazing.
Yeah.
I beat it in one night, was scared, stuck to my screen, scared.
It won Game of the Year all over the place. I think that was 2015. I'd like to play that next. As soon as I finished playing Edith Finch, it was like, do you want to play Gone Home?
That really dark side-scroller?
No, not a side-scroller. Gone Home is you're this girl. And she comes home from...
Don't spoil anything for me, because I know, like, nothing except that it's good.
It is so darn good. It took me about 5 hours to beat. She comes home to an empty house, and you just kind of figure out, why is no one here? And you just look through clues. There is some interactiveness. You find clues, find keys, find items, and it's one home. It's just one house, and you start unlocking some crazy things about the home that you're going to. It's been about five years since I played it, right? Yeah, it was back in Columbia.
Was it that old?
No, maybe four. I swear it's about 4 years old. Maybe that's it.
Could have been 14. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I just downloaded it. Actually, BitTorrented it because it looks so good. I downloaded it.
What? Yep. It's an indie game. Pay the $15.
To each their own. And I was broke.
If you're going to cheat somebody, cheat the big guy. Don't cheat the small guy.
Yeah.
But it was an amazing game. It kept me glued. I told my wife to turn the lights on a couple of times because it's when you have your headphones on, and I was playing it through my computer on my screen. I mean, my wife was into it. It was scary.
I've heard that like great. When you're in it, it's tense enough where like it seems like there are going to be jump scares, but it's not a scary
game.
There's
not a single... it's been a few years. Spoilers. But there's not really big jump scares. It's just kind of terrifying itself just going
you're
through
in
the
empty
home.
House.
Yeah. And stuff. They make it terrifying.
So Gone Home really broke in the genre. Before then, there was Dear Esther and Everybody Goes to the Rapture. Am I saying that right? Everyone's gone to the... It's something like that. But they're both made by the Chinese...
Everyone get on down to the Rapture.
Everybody get on down to the Rapture. And those are both made by the Chinese Room, which... There's a whole very interesting story about them, but run by Jessica Curry, who's a great video game developer, publisher, composer. She does all of it. She does everything. And those are good games in their own right. I mostly just like the soundtrack of Dear Esther. But I tried playing Dear Esther a while ago, and it's a lot more walking and less story. Like, it's a lot of walking where I was like, okay, I still love the soundtrack, but I don't think I can keep doing. So when I heard really good things about Edith Finch, this is, you start the game, you are Edith Finch, and the game starts and you're looking at a journal and that you've written, and your character starts reading what's in front of her. And as you do, the screen goes black and the words like light up. And then suddenly you're in the story that she's reading. And so you're on this island where her family's house was. And it's this crazy-looking house in the middle of some island. And basically, it walks through this story. It's another empty house. And it tells the story of her entire family and basically the curse that they all believe they have. And without talking about anything in the story, you walk through this house and figure out why everything is the way it is. And you can really decide for yourself if the curse is real or what. Kind of the idea is... her family thinks they have a curse, and she's trying to find out if they really do or if just saying that they have a curse has made it real. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. That said, don't go into this game looking for a bundle of laughter. It's definitely a heavy game, but like it's charming. The artwork is great. That is a game that's a story that 100% cannot be anything but a video game. The way they tell the story, it couldn't possibly be a book or a movie or a TV show or anything. It could only be a game. So, like, you're walking through, you have the narration, but as you come across some beautiful scene, the words that are being narrated to you will appear in an aesthetically pleasing way with the background.
Hmm.
And then as you uncover your family members' stories, they're like almost like 12 family members, maybe. All of their stories are different. They all look like totally different games. Like, if you only saw snapshots of the stories when it goes into them, none of them look like the same game at all. And the way that they did that on purpose is fascinating and beautiful. And so a little indie game or a little indie studio made that over 5 years. And they made another indie called The Incredible Swan, which is a super artsy or the unfinished Swan,
which is a super artsy. Is Edith Finch very linear? I mean, because it's a walking simulator, and I get what I mean is Gone Home had its. There were things that when I finished the game, I was still lost on because I didn't find out, and there's other things I could have done,
oh, yeah.
Such as in a study. The study I could have read some more books in the study to unlock other areas or figure out where I could go.
So is it, yeah.
It's guess it's linear. Going to one end, right, the end of the game, but there are other things that I could have done.
You could kind
of
branch out and do a little more
investigating.
Another way to ask is there a replayability or is it meant to be just a single experience?
Edith Finch for sure is a single experience. Yeah. You can go back and kind of do some stuff, but
I agree with Gone Home. I mean, I was a little interested, but it was just intense once. I don't think it could be as intense again.
For sure. Yeah, it's definitely not a game. It's all about not knowing what's next. Mm-hmm. But it does a really good job of always leading you to the next thing. Like, there was only one tiny second that I was stuck, and I realized it was just because I was being dumb. But there's constantly forward motion, and like we're in Dear Esther, you're on an island, and you just walk before you get to the next story beat. This one, you're not going 10 seconds without something that's telling, you know, something from the narrator or a clue or something cool you see that is always giving you this feeling of progression. You always feel like you're moving forward, which I think is the easiest thing to mess up in a walking simulator, which is why people used to rail on them so bad, because it would just be, you know, a lot of those stories you could have done in a book. You know, it didn't really need to be a game. This could have been a book with some pictures on every few pages.
I'm pretty sure in Gone Home you could beat the game in 20 minutes if you knew the exact places to go, when and where to open up certain things. I was stuck. Like I said, it took me 4 or 5 hours in the evening, even though that still seems short to beat a game. Mm-hmm. But you're really tied into it. Like, there were times where, you know, you have to, like, knock on walls and look for hollow planks and things. Like, I didn't know. It took me forever. You're just stuck in this hallway. What do I do? It was definitely difficult. At least Gone Home. I definitely recommend it. If you're looking, I think it'd be a great game for couples, by the way. So if someone's out there listening, you know, everyone wants to play a video game, date, do it. Me and my wife loved it together.
Yeah, because they're so cinematic that they're good viewing and playing experiences. Yeah. I mean, last thing I'll say on Edith Finch, I mean, I highly recommend it, very highly recommend it. If you want to learn more, the internet is absolutely full of reviews. I heard a million of them before I ever bought the game. But, man, I've been thinking about some of those story beats since Friday, you know, for days.
You said you got it on sale. Has it been out for a while?
Yeah, it came out sometime in 2017. I want to say maybe even like early 2017. But yeah, it's been out for a while. But super highly recommend it. It's not really for the faint of heart, but I enjoyed every minute of it. It goes all in on its art style. Like, it knows exactly what it's trying to do, and it does it. So, you know, you never feel like they missed their mark, which was great. So check out that game.
Awesome. Who's next?
Talk about World of Warships?
Yeah, I can. So, not a ton about the game itself, but more just sort of in general how developers approach additional content, big changes to an existing game, people feeling cheated or overpromised something, things like that. So,
when did WoW come out?
they usually use WoW's Warship, it hasn't been officially out that long, so it did one of these things that they did since it's a freemium game, and they weren't, you know, going to charge people anything on release. They did a very open beta, essentially, and it just sort of soft launched into it. So it's probably been out of 2 or 3 years.
I think it's been out 2 years. I remember it being publicized all over Steam.
Yep, and it has a pretty big player base for what it is. I guess maybe not even for what it is. It has a pretty big player base still. And I would say growing, you know. So, of course, there's attrition on any game, but I think this is still gaining popularity. And so the devs have announced kind of two big things recently. So for anybody who doesn't know, just a quick rundown. You basically have 4 ship classes, right? And it's all from World War I to World War II era ships. So you've got destroyers, which are small, fast, launch torpedoes. It's hard to detect them. You've got cruisers, which are just a little bit more armor, a little bit better guns, but not as fast. Then up to battleships, which are your big tanks, heavy armor. And then aircraft carriers, which I think everybody knows what an aircraft carrier is.
They craft a lot of air.
Yes. And that's kind of how it's been.
So I'm going to picture this in my head. What does it look like when you're playing?
So you're in a third-person perspective and you're driving your boat around. I'm sorry. vessel.
Oh, it's an action figure.
You're driving your boat around, and, you know, it's basically WSAD, right? You rudder left, rudder right, go faster or slower. And then you have, you know, your guns, which you aim around with your mouse, and they take time to traverse, you know? So, like, the bigger ship will take, you know, 60 seconds for your guns to go all the way around the ship. So your positioning is important if you want to continue to fight, things like that. And you're on a big map that's mostly spotted with islands mm-hmm. to break up the water.
Which is nice because it gives you, like, little hiding spaces mm-hmm. and, like, you can get real creative with where you position your boat.
Positioning is extremely important. And the game, you know, it's one of those great games that has a lot of, it's very broad and deep. So for people who don't want to dive into the crazy mechanics.
Man, so many nautical references.
Yeah. Deep.
Broad. The ocean. Drop a depth charge on us.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about that. So there's just a lot of ships, a lot of variety in gameplay. Aircraft carriers work completely different from other ships. It's like a top-down strategic view where you manage your squadrons of planes. And like I said, so positioning is very important. And so on the deep level of gameplay, even the way you angle your ship to somebody is important because you could get shots that glance off of your armor because, ooh. You know, if it's something coming at a 45-degree angle, that has to go through more armor than if it comes in at a 90-degree angle, you know?
Man, things I've learned about pirate ships.
Uh-huh.
You can build a game out of it.
Exactly. I think people have. Anyway, so...
Wait, so can you... Tell me you can put, like, a Jolly Roger flag somewhere on your
ship. You can get flags, and, you know, all sorts of the naval...
This is not signals.
Throw up signals, and they actually are, like, add stats to your ship and stuff. And you unlock signals and flags through crates, right? And you unlock... you can actually have camo on your ship.
Oh, that's cool.
Paint jobs that give you different stats.
Yeah, it's like floating cargo shorts.
Yeah.
exactly. And so there's, you know, there's different maps. You sort of rank up your ships, add new armaments to them and stuff. And then, you know, after you get enough experience with a ship, you can unlock the next one, right? But this type of gameplay has been pretty static for a while since release, really. And they've added some variety in changing mechanics by adding special abilities. And they've added ships that are maybe a little bit harder to detect or have more torpedoes or different stuff like that. But the core gameplay has been pretty much the same. So they announced recently two big things. One is they're completely reworking how aircraft carriers work. So right now it's this very difficult to play, you know, hard to master strategy game, basically, where you have to fly your planes around and they can spot for ships so that the ships firing on the enemy can't even be seen by the enemy. And there's a lot of craziness to it. And it's a very micromanaging and you have to multitask. So you could have four squadrons flying around the map and you have to
manage. You don't control the squadrons.
You do.
Oh, wow.
Not each individual plane. You say, this squadron go here. And, you know, you want your fighters to take out their torpedoes or torpedo planes while your torpedo planes are going launching at their battleships.
Okay.
A lot of positioning, importance, things like that. Well, they decided it was too difficult because, you know, entry-level players or the people who want the broad experience in the game to be able to try every ship and, you know, are just really terrible at it. And therefore, a lot of people just don't play aircraft carrier. And so they're basically changing it to be more action-y. You'll launch one squadron of planes and control the planes to fly over somewhere, do their thing, and come back. And that's it. And so you'll have a little bit more boat control. It's a little more important now where it wasn't before. But they're completely removing the strategy aspect to it.
I love games without strategy.
Well, not they're removing the sort of RTS feeling, right? Whereas this is just a sort of a third-person action game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's the people who have gotten really good at that, the players, are understandably upset. And, of course, the people really dedicated to the game are the loudest voices on Reddit, on the Wargaming forum. Wargaming.net is the developer and whatnot. And then the other change that they announced, right, which has just contributed to this sort of, I don't know, not outrage, but just the conversation about devs making changes to establish gameplay with not really any notice, is they announced that for a special event, in October, they are adding submarines, which is basically something they said they would never do. Because it's just, it adds a whole level of mechanics to the game that they didn't want to add. And it adds a whole lot to the game. I mean,
some would say that they added just a little too much
depth. Too much depth?
Uh-huh. Too much depth.
So, for example, they don't even have anything below the water modeled right now. Because there was no reason to.
Right.
So they're going to have to go across all the maps and model what's under the water. And so, it's a lot of change
That's
for them.
That's a lot.
It is, yeah. And there's not like a bajillion maps, but there's a lot.
But that has to say something. A, it's either the player base is growing enough to mm-hmm. the point where they need to add it, or they need to make a rapid change to get the player base back. So what is it?
I think it's actually more they want to – they're more – and this is my ultimate point is that they're not catering to the extreme players. They're not catering to the end game because those are a small percentage of players, really. They're trying to cater to the casual gamers and keep people interested and keep people coming into the game. They don't have a problem, I don't think. I don't know numbers, but I don't think they have a problem with player base dwindling right now. They want to, I think, accelerate the growth of the game. Mm-hmm. And by adding more dynamics and making things more playable, you might piss off the most hardcore players a little bit. But ultimately, I think across any game, that's the risk you have to take.
So there's World of Warships, which we're talking about right now. World of Tanks.
Yep, that's their game too.
Okay, is there a World of Airships?
There's a World of Airplane? Planes? Warplanes? I think it's World of Warplanes.
Yep. Do they have space of spaceships?
I wish they did. We talked about Fractured Space last week. Pretty That's similar right. game.
Okay.
Which I also played some more this weekend.
Nice.
But their main competitor is War Thunder.
Oh, yes. I've heard of War
which
Thunder.
Which a lot of us have played. Yes. Pretty similar. What War Thunder did was actually, and similar criticisms have actually come their way because they've already done a lot of this stuff. They actually built the ships and the tanks onto one game with the planes. So you can play them all on one map. But they, too, have been accused of the same stuff where they said they're never adding anything beyond World War II ships. And then they added a bunch of stuff. Helicopters, more like Vietnam era kind of stuff, and pissed off a bunch of players for it. But more than likely, kept more people invested in the game in the long run.
You know what? This reminds me of, I was just talking to one of my buddies a couple weekends ago. He still to this day plays RuneScape mm-hmm. all the time, and he mm-hmm. loves it. He will never stop talking about how much he likes RuneScape and the devs and the way they make their decisions. Well, I've been out of that scene for a long time. But I value what my friend values in developers. And so he's telling me that RuneScape pretty recently, but I couldn't tell you how recently, first of all, they've introduced raids into RuneScape. This is important to what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because when they did that, they were taking a really big step.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new. Like, there hadn't even, as far as I know, there hadn't even been dungeons, like multi-person dungeons in RuneScape ever before. And now they're doing raids. So there are, you know, questions of how is that going to go down, but also like, hey, do you guys want more loot? Do you guys want an armor set that comes out when we release this? There were a lot of questions because you don't want to piss everybody off. So what they did is they went on the forums and they put up a poll that said, here are some options. Like, what would you guys like to see from our new content? We want you guys to vote, but we won't do anything unless we get an overwhelmingly positive response of 70%. So if something 60% of the players want to do it, it's not enough. They won't do it. And when he continued to explain, he went back to clarify that they had asked, Jagex is the developer, they went back and asked the player base. They said, hey, we're going to start having polls to ask you guys how to release content. What do you want the threshold to be? Where when we reach this threshold, we're going to pull the trigger. And people said 70%. So they don't do anything without 70% agreement, mm-hmm. which like means that any idea that comes out has really got to go through the gauntlet. You can have player suggestions and all this stuff, but nothing happens that the players don't.
How are their polls done?
It's all through their forums. You have to log in, okay. And one account gets one vote. I mean, probably you could spoof it, but
so I definitely,
70% is a big.
It is. That's
amount.
Huge. I mean, you know, greater than a supermajority, right?
I've never heard
of any
company doing something like that.
Nope. I think that level of community engagement is fantastic. right? And that's a lesson to be learned by so many different developers. And really, it definitely plays right into what we're talking about, in that you can avoid pissing off even a small fraction of your player base by just communicating better, right?
Transparency is a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. And for their part, Wargaming.net has been accused for a long time of just making changes wholesale with zero communication. Things, changes made that aren't even in patch notes that affect the game.
The issue with video games as a business is a lot of things have to be done for money, and especially when money comes into play, a company won't ask because they know what they're going to do no matter what. So they would just rather drop it, you know, ask for forgiveness, not permission, and they'll just do it. And I see the reasoning in that, but that doesn't make me any happier when you drop something I don't like. You know, there's a way to, you know, maybe go too much in the direction of asking players what they want. Sometimes you can ask players what they want, they tell you, you give it to them, and it turns out they didn't like it.
Yep.
So you shouldn't have listened to them. But players aren't often given that kind of chance. And those opinions, like the feedback that you get from a community, is only valuable if your community is well cultivated.
Yeah.
If you have a good admin presence, if you have a you know, even like a Reddit community, having people who, like non-employees, who go out of their way to keep this community healthy, those are important things to having a community that can give positive, useful feedback. Because sometimes a player base like League of Legends, Riot could ask everybody what they want and they could just get nothing but terrible responses.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be fair. They
probably would.
Yeah. So it would be fair to see why they would not do a RuneScape and ask everybody what they want, because you won't get any useful feedback.
Well, and there's something to be said for, if you're just using something like the forums, well, probably only the most dedicated players are going to be navigating that anyway. Mm-hmm. So you're only getting a certain section.
It reminds me of something I was reading on Reddit the other day. They were making a comparison of, like, if you took a group of people just off of the streets and you said, come together with your best idea for, like, what is a TV show that you would love. And they were like, you would get a response back that would be, I want a family that's really down to earth, very relatable, that's in a drama with robots.
Like, I was going to say, I feel like you just, the ultimate answers you would get would just be Star Trek, but everyone's naked.
It depends on which one. Enterprise, I'm down.
Yeah.
That's where the feedback comes in.
Exactly, yeah. So I think ultimately my feeling that I've gotten out of the whole thing, and I'm very excited for the upcoming changes, but my ultimate feeling is that I think that in most cases, the most dedicated part of a player base needs to let the dev, or give them some benefit of the doubt, and let them make changes to the game, even if they're big, because it may be important for the long-term life of the game. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that devs can't introduce big changes that just completely screw the game up and everybody quits. Star Wars Galaxy is a great example.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any others immediately, but
I feel like the change to aircraft carriers is a bad move, just because one of my favorite things about World of Warships is that the pace of the game is really totally up to you, depending on what kind of ship you want to pilot. So, like, if I want a fast-paced, fun shooting game, then I can hop in a cruiser. If I want, like, a slower, more powerful game, do a battleship. If I want an RTS, even, play the aircraft carrier. I mean, I feel like if you take that aspect away from the game, that is not a good thing. It's not a good thing to make the aircraft carrier easy, because if people want to play something easy, they can just play a different ship.
Yeah, and I agree with that to a point. But I think the counter there is that if the mechanic is so hard that people aren't even willing to invest time to try it because they get so discouraged by it, I don't know if it's worth keeping. You know, if you want those other, you know, if you want,
maybe just make different kinds of aircraft carriers, like have smaller, faster aircraft carriers that only have a single group of ships or something. I don't know. I think there's other ways you could do it without completely changing all of the aspects of the aircraft carriers.
Probably so. It may be a mistake simplifying it too much, but, I don't know. I do agree that something has to change with the way it's implemented right now. Because you'll join matches, you know, full rosters on each side that don't have aircraft carriers in them at all.
Yeah.
Frequently. Because people just don't play
them. Yeah, I've with all the matches I've played, I can count like on my hands the number of times that I've played with an aircraft carrier.
And the problem is some people will kit out their ships for anti-aircraft, right? And
they will what out?
Kit out. You know? Out. So like you add your flags and signals for bonuses to stuff and or your camo. And one of the things that you can get bonuses on is aircraft anti-aircraft range, you know, power.
I got you. It's your loadout.
Yeah. So if you put that kit together and you don't have any aircraft in the game, well, you've wasted some, and you don't know before you join the game.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
It's totally random based on the pool of available players right now.
Hey, you know how I said that stuff about No Man's Sky, how it didn't teach you stuff very well?
Mm-hmm.
I've played like 30 hours of that game now. I dropped my controller yesterday and figured out there was a melee button. So, yeah, there's a tutorial for you.
See, it's good, though, because it has depth.
Do you have to drop your controller to do it every time?
Yeah. It's like it's a durability control thing, yeah, but it's based on your controller's durability.
Your damage depends on how hard it hits.
Right.
We want to take a quick break?
Yeah, let's take a quick break and then talk about the news.
Yeah, let's do that.
Cool.
Hello, this is Ray from the Heroes Podcast Network. And I am here to tell you about Screen Heroes. Do you love superheroes? What about superheroes in film and TV? How about weird rankings like top five lists or maybe three people just arguing about top five lists? Either way, we are the podcast for you. Check us out every Tuesday night live on Twitch. Or subscribe to Screen Heroes Podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and Google Play. Now, back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
All right. Telltale Business.
Telltale Business. Let's talk about it. Man. So, Telltale, they are well known. They started off with, they started off with The Wolf Among Us.
Mm-hmm.
The first season that came out ages ago. And then The Walking Dead,
the Borderlands series,
which up until like a week ago was, still ongoing.
Yeah.
The first season I played, I really enjoyed it. It's not everybody's cup of tea. It's a point and click. And it's got cell shading, so it looks like a comic book. The first season was great. I never did anything after that just because, like, I don't really have a good reason for it. But they've also done the Batman series. They've done Minecraft story mode.
Oh, they did story mode?
Mm-hmm.
God, I had to sit through that shit with my son.
God dang, I hated it. Was it bad?
It's so bad.
Well,
I thought you built stuff in this game. Nope, you don't do any building in Minecraft story mode.
Yeah, point and click. And they did Borderlands one as well.
You just watch a guy build a shitty house.
You sit there, but you can't do anything about it. You're like, wait, no, they're still good. You missed a spot.
Maybe it's about the Minecraft PvP. It's just people dumping lava on each other's faces.
That sounds fun.
It is fun.
Oh, it's super fun.
Anyway.
Well, Telltale, so this just happened. The company that owns Telltale, they surprised everybody with a company-wide meeting and said, hey, everybody, welcome. We're closing. You're all fired. No severance. And really, that's how the employees all found out. And they had, I kid you not, they had 30 minutes to leave the building.
Oh, my God.
No severance. They had nothing to show for all the overtime they had done, all the time they didn't go on vacation. I mean, all these ex-employees went on Twitter and were just like, what the fuck? Pissed. Like, it makes me mad hearing about this stuff. This stuff happens in the game industry way too often. But they went to this meeting. They were told that they were closing, so the company can legally not give everybody severance because it's not a layoff, it's a closure.
Yeah.
So
do we have any details, I guess, before we launch into more about what happened to the employees? Do we have any details about why?
They've had big releases that just didn't sell well.
They sell them for $3. I mean, I don't know what you want. I feel like they're always $2 or $3. Every time I see one on sale, it's like $1.50.
Just to speculate. Yeah, I mean, they're generally cheap. I mean, I got on Steam, I got the whole first season of Walking Dead for like $7. That's about the best value of money I actually paid, like not a free game, that I've ever gotten. I love that game. But it doesn't seem that surprising to me because I don't hear people talk about those games that much anymore. Minecraft Story Mode, it's confusing to me who that was really supposed to go to. The Wolf Among Us,
No, my son hated it.
Oh, really?
No, he hated it too. We tried to get into it. He just wanted to build.
How far did you get?
Yeah. I'd say about 2-3 hours into the game. Yep. Meet all your sidekick friends. I can't remember their names, but then you go and, yeah.
Pig.
The Telltale one was good, but obviously you needed to know Borderlands to play it, and I didn't. I only knew, like, I don't know, I probably played through, like, the first 2/3 with my girlfriend, enough to, like, definitely understand the humor in the world, more or less, but not enough to get really, to pick up what it was laying down, you know. And it was a good game, but I would have enjoyed it more if I had played the games. Mm-hmm. So that's another time, like, much like Minecraft, it's like, who are you? You're really making your audience pretty small here. So to knock it out of the park, boy, you would just have to...
Well, here
make
it is.
Every single person in your audience love this game.
With Minecraft Story Mode, I mean, the game is, it's toned down to 3-4-year-olds can play Minecraft. Literally, you go around, it's on their iPads. It's very easy to just build things. Story Mode, A, you got to be able to read. My son could not play the game without me there. So he couldn't read. And then I had to keep controlling it because he couldn't read it. I keep moving and telling him, oh, press up arrow. And then the quick time events, gosh, he was the worst at those. You know, so what do I do? You know, I mean, he's only 6, so he didn't really understand.
They're not called slow time events.
Yeah, no, they're not called slow time events. But yeah, so it's like, well, we just raised the bar for who can play this game, right? The game's for little kids, and now you're expecting 12-year-olds,
and what little kid was asking for a story mode? They're like, man, I just really wish there was a fleshed-out campaign.
I'm picturing a 3-year-old, and you're like, press X, I can't read.
That's why they have colors.
They do have colors. I would say press the blue one.
It's too bad they closed, because I have a jackpot idea for them.
Oh, hey, maybe you can bring them back. Actually, okay, well.
Fortnite.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. I can't wait to have more Fortnite in my life.
That actually does sound like something they would do.
Oh, yeah.
Men and women, they had no warning that the company, like, they knew that the company's future was shaky, but they just had layoffs last year, about 12 months ago. I think it was about 10 months ago. And that was a layoff. It was like 25% of the company. And now, like, so with those people, there had to be severances because it was a layoff. With this closure, they're down to a skeleton crew of 25 people to finish the Minecraft Story Mode season, the chapter that's about to come out next. But, like, the actress who plays Clementine, I'll find her name on here, she wrote a letter on Twitter that was just like, hey, thanks for everybody's support. You know, it's been a great run. But it's like a bummer that I can't finish The Walking Dead, the final season. It's literally called The Final Season. Mm. And I think they're about to come out with the second episode here in a couple days. And then that's going to be it. So they're so close to the end, and it's over. Like, they couldn't have done anything better. And the problem is they definitely could have. Where, like, this is a time, like, maybe we get some letters about this, but I support unions, but I would never want to be a part of one. But I'm not going to dive headfirst into all that. But the video game industry could really use unions because there are so many practices over the past decade that, like in this case, the owners, the people at the top, they knew this was coming. They didn't tell anybody because they knew that they could do this. They could get away with it. And it doesn't matter because, what, I'm going to be upset? I'm not going to do anything. It's not like they're going to lose my money by me being mad because they're out of business. But if there was a union, they could do something to demand that this couldn't happen because like this happens now. In 2015, the one I always go back to is BioShock Infinite was widely voted the game of the year by everybody, and 6 months later everybody was out of a job because the guy Kevin Levine, who's in charge of that studio, he decided he wanted to do something different. He wanted to downsize. So everybody just got let go.
Well, you know, so is Telltale owned by anybody?
Yeah, I could pull up the name. I've read it, but I just never remember it.
So there are probably different situations that go on when these things happen, right?
I think Telltale owns themselves.
Okay, which is what I thought. So in that case, they don't have access necessarily to more money to continue anything. It's an unfortunate business reality. And yes, there probably could have been better planning, better executive management. But once they run out of money, they don't have money to pay employees
anymore. Better products?
Right.
Well, but, yes, that's, but like, that's absolutely true. But once you get to the end of the line, what do you do?
Well, what you do, so who was it? There was a... I should look this up and see if I can add it in later, but there was a company a couple of years ago that went under, but the devs, like the people in charge, absolutely went out of their way to write recommendation letters. Mm-hmm. They did everything they could to help these people find jobs before the company was totally under. And
I feel like in an alternate universe, this is when Netflix swoops in and starts doing gaming so that they can help something yeah. finish out the series instead yeah. of just TV shows.
Yeah, yeah.
There's an idea.
But, you know, you see look examples like that, and those are definitely unusual. Most companies don't do that in games or otherwise. But, you know, they told these people, like, hey, at the end of the month, your healthcare runs out. That's 9 days from now. You know, so it's just like, what? I have a family. Like, I don't have any severance pay. I don't have a job. My health care ends. I don't have anything I don't have anything 9 days from now. Well, yep. I don't have anything from now. And they had 30 minutes to leave the buildings. And by the time they went back to their desks, their Google accounts were already shut down. They couldn't access any stuff.
That sucks. It, right? Does. It sucks a lot, and I feel ways. Very bad for those employees.
Dude.
But that is not something that is unique to gaming industries.
But gaming doesn't have...
When companies
have...
shut down, these things happen. But there was a local company that this happened to.
This happens all the time in the gaming industry, and employees have no protection against it. They just have to roll the dice and hope they get an employer that's generous.
But it's different when you have something like BioShock. Where you're owned by a large parent corporation who has funds to do stuff with. Mm-hmm. In this case, we have a smaller company who, you know, the reality is that the executives were probably, and I have no idea whether this is true or not, but assuming they wanted to continue this company, right? They were probably busting their asses for months or even a year or whatever prior trying to find more capital to keep the company running. Mm-hmm. And they could not find anybody willing to invest in them. And you can't start planning for shutting down or investors run even further away.
This makes me think of a game. It's a situation that I find a lot of game companies do as well to try and revitalize or make you think they're revitalizing games or their company is like, for example, Bless Online. It's an MMO. Came out in Korea. Failed. Relaunched in Russia, Europe. Semi-failed, relaunched in the U.S., failed. But they kept that game going on for 3 years just to keep relaunching it, make some quick cash, and I'm telling you right after it launches in the U.S., it's going under. This happens a lot with MMOs. MMOs are dime a dozen. They start in Korea, start in the Asia-Pacific, they make your way over, and then they shut down completely. It's just their path to get quick cash and then shut off, get a new project going. I don't know. That's what I think. I see a lot of games go through that process as well.
Well, so something that came back in this article, I'll share it to you so we can get in the clip notes because it's by Kotaku. It's a full, extensive article. It's really good. That it was like people the night before were working overtime mm-hmm. that was unpaid because they were expecting either their salary or their severance, mm-hmm. but they didn't get that. Like, I understand. What you're saying of like you don't want to look like you're closing because you won't get investors and you'll never fix it, but like maybe tell people to stop working overtime because you know that this isn't going to do anything.
Well, there are literally plenty of examples out there of investment deals falling through at the very last hour, and the very next day they have to shut down because they're out of money. You know, I don't know the details, and I don't know if the details are even out there. And it sucks for the employees, but, you know, if you tell people to stop working overtime, that's also going to send a message and it's going to create some chaos, right? Like, oh, yeah, we're struggling financially, so don't keep working hard on our products because that's really going to help the company. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I can't do anything when but feel bad for the people
when companies are about to go
affected,
down,
but...
ethics go out the window.
Well, no, I mean... Yeah. I just don't know if there's necessarily an ethics problem here because we don't have the details in front of us.
I mean,
we know what happened to the employees, and that sucks. But we don't know what decisions led to that.
Right, but that means incompetence at the top level. They, like, no matter what happened,
in the long run, yeah, because if they had such a, you know, and not to cast anything on the product that was put out, but if they essentially had such a poor product that they couldn't keep the company alive, then it called for new leadership a long time ago.
Yeah. Right?
And that's, so that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
But I can't say that necessarily the steps that led to the company shutting down in the last, you know, hour,
yeah,
were if they had any choice,
right?
If they wanted to even try to keep people's jobs, I don't know. We don't know we don't know their motives. Maybe they weren't even trying.
That's true. But at the end of the day, the employees are not protected, and
right,
no matter what happened at the top end of that business,
yeah,
you've got employees that are just kicked out on their asses, and one way or another, that is unacceptable. And like,
yeah,
fortunately, the gaming industry lives on the internet. I mean, everybody knows somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. So technically, it can be easier for people to jump to another ship. But that's not always the case. And a burn like this, maybe somebody will be done with the industry for good,
sure,
after mm-hmm, something like this. Sure. But like, no matter what the reasons were that led to why this happened, it's unacceptable that tomorrow you're out of a job and you've got to file for unemployment with absolutely no warning. Like, I understand that when the money dries up, it's gone. But there's no reason that as an employee, if I'm putting in overtime and I'm putting out a product that enough people like, or that, you know, I'm being told that I'm going to be paid for when the rug is pulled out from under me, there just shouldn't be a scenario where I am stuck in that situation with no way out.
Right.
And that's not just a games industry thing, but this sure does happen in the games industry a lot. You know,
you don't want to see that happen. And you would think that, the powers that be would see the writing on the wall at least a couple weeks in advance to be able to wrap things up more nicely.
Or hell, just like, you know, at my company, we have work phones, and if you get fired, unless there's some unusual circumstances, you don't have a lot of time to, like, pull everything off your phone. Like, probably you're handing over your work phone because you're fired.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a difference between that and, hey, you're locked out of your Google account now. It's deactivated.
Yeah.
And you just found out. And stuff like that, where it's like, okay, there are little things where it's like, yo, a little bit of planning goes a long way. And
I guess what's the benefit if you're going to close, not layoffs, it's a closure. What's the benefit of not telling your current associates? I just outrage, I guess. It allows them to at least plan.
Well, again, they may have not had all the information in front of them until the night before, you know.
I guess.
Another thing to keep in mind with these things is that there are legal rules for where your money goes or what your remaining money goes when you close.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly what the order of operations is, but for example, outstanding debt may have to be paid off before you pay employees anything.
Mm-hmm.
So if that was something that was looming and they thought they had a plan for it and all of a sudden they didn't.
Yeah, the only way they could pay for it is to stop paying everybody else.
Exactly.
Their severance.
But that's still shitty of them.
It is.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, but, we all agree that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there was a dearth of responsible running of this company, right?
Yeah.
But I just don't know if the way that things turned out are shitty, but I don't know if it's like this big, you know, is there anyone really to blame, any one person to point to?
Well, just systemic issues.
Is it villainy, you know?
Telltale should come out with a QuickTime game of how to run a gaming company.
Yeah. It might do pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just get tired of hearing stories of, hey, everything's great, you're out on your ass. You know, I don't know what to do to fix it as a gamer, because it's not like I can vote now with my checkbook to fix it. But, you know, when you decide to open this up a studio, when you're in any sort of business that employs people, you're a family as far as I'm concerned. Like, you put bread on the table for your employees.
Yeah.
It is absolutely your responsibility to take care of those people. And to have this happen, boy, it sucks. But they haven't responded with any sort of comment.
Right.
And, you know, that's the equivalent of your family just like disowning you. It's like, yeah, sorry, like, sorry, there's nothing we can do, but also, bye, like, get out of here. You know, you have 30 minutes to leave the building. Like, yeah. What the hell? Anyway, Thomas is angry, and I got opinions.
It's extraordinarily shitty.
It's just sad to see. You don't want to see that happen to anybody, and when it's in, like, a part of the entertainment industry that you care about, where a lot of people are in it because they're passionate, you know, a lot of them, it's not like computer science where you studied to program to get in this, where you can probably get hired on somewhere else where similar work's going on. In the video game industry, sometimes what you get is what you got. And, you know, it's one of the industries where you can almost pull yourself up by the bootstraps and get where you want to go without an education sometimes. Mm-hmm. So once the work dries up, on one hand, it can be easier to find it because you're connected through the internet. You can find work more easily. But on the other hand, the skills you have learned might not be applicable at the companies that you'd like to work for.
I think it is part of the risk of the gaming development world too, though. Like if you're at a normal tech company, you have multiple projects going on all at the same time, and you're constantly picking up new projects. And by the time you finish one, you're already like deep into another one. But in the gaming world, unless you're a big development company, you may focus all of your efforts into a single game. And then once that game releases, now you have all these people that you've been paying a lot of money. You've gotten to a point to where now you're releasing the game. Now what do you do?
Yeah. And that's why they lay them
unless,
off.
Unless you pick up a gigantic project immediately after the release, then how could you possibly support that? So,
dude, that's the risk of making your own indie studio, because the people who make What Remains of Edith Finch, you can see at the end pictures of the whole team like in different stages of their life, which reflects what you find in the game. And you see the whole team then and now, and you see a big group photo of them at the end of stuff. And so they worked on it for 5 years, and you know, indie games are a whole different ball game from big titles, because you've got that team looked like it was 12 or 15 people maybe, and the whole risk that comes with that is so personal. You know, on one hand, if the money dries up there, probably you see it coming, and there's nothing you can do about it, but you can work through it together. With a bigger project, the risk isn't as personal. Mm-hmm. So when the shit hits the fan, you know, it's not a family thing. But also, you know, with the nature of like big AAAs, the developers and publishers can be totally different. Where with an indie game, they might publish their own stuff, which keeps it all in house, and it's just a different dynamic. You know, indie games are an interesting insight on kind of DIY gaming, like programming, that didn't exist 10 years ago. Like, not really. So it's just, on one hand, it's like, do you take it into your own hands and just do it yourself? I mean, just like anything, if you're building houses, do I take a greater risk and do it myself? There might be more profitability, but it's a big risk, especially if you're a first timer. You don't have any credibility. You know, maybe you don't even have anything on your resume.
I mean, with games at the same time, it's like, you could be fantastic at code. That doesn't mean you're going to be able to make the sprites or anything. Like, you can't necessarily make the actual artwork in the game. It is definitely a community event.
Like, yo, I beat Halo 3 like 10 times, but probably you don't want me on your art team.
Yeah. Certainly, our hearts go out to the now ex-employees.
Anyway, I'm tired of laughing.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's some crazy stuff. I just wish it didn't happen.
For sure.
I'll link that Kotaku article because really it's really good. It's pretty comprehensive.
Mike, you want to tell us about some Talisman?
Absolutely. Talisman is awesome. Let's start with that. So, Talisman, first of all, so this weekend we decided to play Talisman. It's been a little while since we played the game, so I decided to go ahead and pick up an expansion for it. We picked up the Reaper expansion. So, for anybody that isn't familiar with Talisman, Talisman is a board game where it's kind of one of those board games where you got to be sure you're playing it on the dining room table because the board is so big, you're not going to fit it on your coffee table, probably. But don't let that deter you, because even though the game is expansive, the nice thing about the game is that 90% of the rules that you're going to use are actually printed on the board on the spaces that you're moving to. So even though you pull everything out of the box and you're looking at everything on the table and you're initially kind of worried about what you're getting yourself into, just skim through the rules quickly, jump into the game, and you'll figure it out pretty soon after a few rounds. So the point of the game is that everyone kind of plays their own character. You can choose, all of the characters are different. Like, you can play a monk, you can play a knight, you can play a troll, you can play a ghoul. There's a bunch of different stuff. They all have different alignments. You can be good alignment, neutral, evil. It's like Dungeons and Dragons Lite without the role playing, and you can complete in a single session.
Mm-hmm. Wait, so supposedly. Those are a lot of qualifiers that make it definitely not D&D.
I just mean, like, it's the same idea in regards to,
it's a role-playing,
like,
game except without the role-playing, so really it's a game.
Well, okay, I guess I didn't necessarily mean role-playing. I guess I mean more like the, if you picture the Dungeons & Dragons world and the different classes and, like, races you can be, there's spells that you can cast. I guess it's just a fantasy game, I guess is what I'm getting after. But that said, the goal in the game is that everyone's trying to reach the middle of the board where the crown of command is. Ooh. And the crown of command is the end of the game. When you put the crown of command on,
hey,
everyone...
Wait a minute. What's the acronym for that?
COCK.
Okay. I just had to meet my quota. Anyway, I'm sorry. Continue. I'm not sorry.
So when you put the crown of command on, it essentially means that every round, everyone else around the table has to roll a die, and if they don't roll a certain point, then they lose a life. And then when they die, and everyone else on the board is dead except for you, if you have the crown of command, you are the winner. So
do they actually have a cutout crown like the Burger King crown?
No, but God, from now on, that's a house rule. Yeah. That is a great idea. That is a fantastic
Gotta
idea.
Have a crown, I think.
So, I mean, the game's really fun. You basically just move around the board. There's three different sections of the board. So there's an outer area, there's an inner area, and then you have, like, the middle area where you're just working up to the crown of command. And every different spot is like a graveyard or a city or plains or forest or whatever, and they all have different rules. So if you land in the city, you go into the city and you could roll a die to see, like, I don't know, what the city fortune teller could grant upon you. Or you could go to the blacksmith to buy a sword or armor or something. Or if you land in the plains or the forest, you may just draw an adventure card. And the adventure card could be something good, like you found some gold in the spot, or maybe it's bad. Maybe you just randomly draw a strength 10 dragon that you have literally no chance of beating, but that's how the game goes sometimes.
Can you flee?
You cannot flee. Oh. You can only flee if you have a spell or if you have a special ability that allows you to flee.
Okay, this serious question. Some of this reminds me of Munchkin, where you draw enemies, you, like, kind of are on the same team, but not totally.
Yes, it's very similar to Munchkin in that, like in Munchkin, if you kill the enemies, then you start to collect your enemies that you've killed, and you can level up certain stats and stuff. Very similar to Talisman. In Talisman, you have two major stats that are your attack stats. You're either high in craft or you're high in strength. So if you're a sorcerer, obviously you'd be high in craft. If you're a troll or something, you're high in strength. And then you have your health stat. On top of that, you have something called fate. And fate are just little coins that you can use to re-roll dice. So you don't have a whole lot of fate normally, depending on your class. But it's just something where, like, if you're fighting that dragon and you're just one away from beating him, you can spend a fate token to re-roll your die. But you have to accept whatever your next roll is. So there's a lot of depth to it, but at the same time, it's not that hard once you get going. So what we did was we decided to get the expansion for it, which is the Reaper. And what that does is it actually adds a lot of different adventure cards, some more spells, and then it adds the Grim Reaper to the board. So for anybody that's ever played Settlers of Catan, It's similar to like the thief. So like if you're rolling on your movement phase and you roll a one, that means that after you complete your turn, now you get to move the Grim Reaper. If you take the Grim Reaper and you move him to a spot that's on top of another player, they have to roll on the Grim Reaper table. And just like everything in Talisman, most of the time, it could be very bad, but there's always a chance that something could be very good. So you could roll a one on the die, and he literally kills your character instantly.
Oh, what?
Instantly.
Oh, no.
Nothing you can do. If you have a fate token, you can reroll, which is what happened to the guy we were playing with. It was one of the greatest things, because the Grim Reaper, if you're only moving him every time you roll a one on movement, you start to think, like, man, it's going to take forever for, like, the Grim Reaper to really get around the board to get to a point to where it can actually land on somebody. Luckily, we were playing with five people, so there's already, like, you know, five characters on the outside of the board. There's enough kind of shotgun blast of, like, players on the board to maybe at some point the Grim Reaper hit somebody. This guy rolled a one, dies instantly, and he says, no, I'm gonna use this fate token. Rolls a one again, and he has to accept it. His character's dead. We're all standing up from the board, screaming, clapping our hands. He's so
Somebody
pissed.
Die!
He's so pissed, he throws the D6 at me. And we all took like just a few minute break, because that's how fun this game is. Like,
did you come back to the table and it was a one again?
No, he was just gone. He was gone at that
point. You never get back.
No, so the nice thing about the game is that if you do die, you just restart with a new character. It sucks because, you know, you lose everything. But Talisman is kind of one of those games, when you think you're winning, you're probably not. If you think you're losing, you're probably not. Because it really just takes time for the board to screw everyone.
How
that's
I play poker.
All right. So, but the cool thing about this expansion that I did not expect at all was that when I opened up the expansion, there was a Steam key, like a free key for the digital game.
Oh, cool.
So the expansion was only $25, and then I got a free copy of the digital game on Steam. Like, that's pretty awesome.
So Talisman's on Steam?
Yeah, you can actually get Talisman on Steam. Now, I don't know much about the Steam game, because I'd never even looked at it before, because I own the board game. So I was like, no real point for me to get it on Steam. But I was talking to John about it when we were playing it, and I was like, you know, how would they even do it in local play? And now I'm wondering if you could do it on the phone or something. But I don't know for sure, so don't quote me on it. But I haven't looked into Steam yet. But if we could do it on cell phone, like like how you do the Jackbox games and stuff, that would be amazing.
I don't know why more digital board games haven't adopted that. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems so straightforward. Just, you keep your personal stuff on your phone, but the board game is on the big screen. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen a single game actually really make use of it.
Yeah, I mean, it would make games like Talisman even easier, because you're not questioning the rules. It just tells you exactly what's going on. One thing that we always have to remind ourselves whenever we start playing Talisman is that some of the rules are, it is a little bit easy for some of the rules for you to misinterpret them. Mm-hmm. So generally the rule of thumb is, if it sounds overpowered, it probably is, and it's not supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So assume the latter.
The tabletop game I play, it's made by just a guy. It's a real small time thing. And so, you know, when we have a question, one of our guys just Facebook messaged the dude, was like, hey, so I don't know if you'll ever get this, but can you answer this question? Immediately responded. We got our stuff. And it was like, wow. And in that game, like, most everything's pretty balanced except for a couple things. And we were like, hey, is this stuff imbalanced? And he's like, yeah, I was really excited about it, but I did not know how to fix it. I just left it in. And it really followed that rule of thumb. If it seems overpowered, it probably is.
Yep.
So, like, as a DM in that case, you just, like, you figure it out. You know, maybe you can't do that thing 10 times in a row.
Yeah.
You know?
So the only problem with the game is that, especially if we're playing with a larger group, so it plays up to 6 players. If you're playing with a larger group, you got to be sure that you start early enough in the day, because this is not a game that you can play in a couple hours. Maybe you could if you were playing one, like two people, but even then I wouldn't even suggest playing 1v1 because then you do kind of run into one person's going to get totally overpowered compared to the other player and it just won't be fun. So I think we played from 6 p.m. to just after midnight and we never even completed it. We got to past midnight, got to the middle of the board, and then we were all getting screwed by the game at this point. And it sounds like we stopped because we were frustrated, but we really just stopped because we were exhausted. We had to stop.
Been there.
I think with four people, you could really dedicated, you could probably finish in 3 to 4 hours. But you know, there were breaks.
Yeah,
we would, you know, but it was fun. Yeah, I really didn't even feel like I missed out by not finishing the game.
Yeah, it is one of those games where it's
exactly not the destination.
It really is, and it's fun, and it's one of those games where you can't. There's even PvP kind of involved in it. So if your character is moving on the board and you land on a space with another character, your choices are to either encounter the character that you land on or follow the rules on the board. So if I land on a spot that allows me to draw an adventure card, I could draw an adventure card, or I could fight the person that I landed on, or if my class has a special ability, like when we were playing on Saturday, John Sorceress had the Beguile ability where he could just steal a follower from you or something. And a follower is like somebody that you may pull from an adventure deck that just follows you and gives you special bonuses in certain places.
A follower.
Yes. A follower, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's funny because I mean, just based on stats and like items and stuff, I was probably
John
winning.
John rolled the one over and over.
No.
Again, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No. Not this time. That does sound like me. No, I was probably winning when we quit.
Yeah.
But if I know anything about this game, if you think you're winning,
you probably not. Well, that may be true, but I guess we'll never find out.
The thing is that...
That's why it's about the journey.
John had more items, more followers, more spells than anybody, but throughout the entire game, he'd only raised like one stat.
Yeah.
So throughout the game, your goal is to raise your stats so that you can get into the more difficult places.
Well, that's like in Munchkin. You can level up or you can just get real strong.
Yeah. So it's like one of those things where you see somebody who's playing and you're like, man, how do they have so much stuff? But then you got to remind yourself, like, if they're not leveling up the stats, there's still a chance that that's going to affect them at some point. Like when you tried to go into the inner area where the Crown of Command was, then you went to that first spot and it was like it wasn't even possible for you to pass it because your craft was too low. Mm-hmm. And it just spits you out all the way to the beginning of the map.
Which I could have read the board better and known that. But
it's like a shoots and ladder. You get to the end, slide all the way down.
So the game can be at times brutal, but it's brutal to everybody, so it's kind of fun.
Sounds fun.
Well, very nice. Definitely hop down to your friendly local game shop and pick that one up.
Absolutely. Highly recommend it. Super fun.
How many players?
Up to six.
Up to six. Cool.
Which I guess I don't get why you couldn't do more, but that would make the game so incredibly
long. I haven't looked at expansions that expand the number of players that you could use, but at the same time, I don't know if you'd want to go above six.
I don't think you would.
Because going around the board with more than six people would just take so
even
long.
Well,
and you'd have
there
more...
are a few games that you want to play with more than six people.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
If you have even one person who's a little disinterested, they're not even going to finish the game.
Yep.
Secret Hitler is like...
Yeah, because the rounds are quick.
Yeah, that's like one of the few games that I'd play with a huge group like that. Yeah.
And if you had six people on the board, you would just have more encounters, PvP.
Every year I go to Bonnaroo. We have like 20 people, and the majority of people play Werewolf, you know, not so unlike Secret Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And man, that is fun
on
a camping trip, I tell you what. Because you can have as many people playing as you want, really. You just at a certain point, you have to buy an extra deck because you definitely break the game a little bit. But if you got good hosts running that, man, it's good stuff. So you guys can edit out all my terrible jokes. And next week... I'd like to talk a little bit about Red Dead. That's coming up next month, October 20-something.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So Derek made a comment about the horse's balls, and then I Then I dropped across.
Excuse me.
The horse's testicles. Balls. Testicles. Yes. So horse's testicles will get smaller correct. When it's cold outside. That's really? That's a headline I read.
I really did.
Well, I don't. I did not go. I wasn't further sure if I was going to buy the game before, but now. But now
man, dude, you could write realistic. A whole article about games that have like ball physics.
Realistic ball. Testicle physics are high on my
horse
list.
Horse testicle needs. Physics.
Honestly,
well, they're high on your list if it's cold. They're low on your list if it's warm.
It really just made me think about
Conan Exiles.
Yeah, when it was like, oh my god, you see his dick when you're making your character? No way!
But let's talk about how that game was really sold on exactly that. Yeah. They knew
that was it. That's all they had.
They're like, there's not really anything in this game, but we can make some controversy.
Yeah, it should have just been Conan, colon, dicks.
Conan, Crown of Command.
all right. Should we wrap up?
Yeah, let's
get
wrap
to
up.
To our question.
Yeah, so what do we have? We had last week, it was, what world would you not want to be an NPC in, right?
That's right, yeah. So we had Rachel online responded, wouldn't want to be in Diablo because bad things are just constantly happening to those NPCs.
That's true. Why do people even live in those villages?
I was thinking about it. It's like, does anything good happen in this universe? Why are there people? Like, if I lived in this world, I'd just be like, well, I have nothing to live for.
How does anyone live long enough to have a child?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if you're Diablo, you should keep coming back, too. So if I would be anyone, I'd be Diablo.
Maybe they all just drink some.
you'd be Diablo. Okay.
Is the main villain considered an NPC?
He's a non-playable character.
You're all technical here.
Okay, well, Josh is banned from the question of the week. Somebody said Grand Theft Auto. I mean, that one's funny because there are all sorts of people doing all sorts of things in those games. You could live pretty all right as an NPC.
I think I'd want to be the guy that owns a chop shop.
Oh, yeah.
The place you always got to pull into to get your vehicle.
Because your shop would be used every, like, 10 seconds.
It's like you're rich. And you're, like, one of the only companies not getting robbed consistently.
Yeah, you're, like, one of the few people actually getting paid in the game.
I wouldn't mind being, like, a fire truck driver or an ambulance driver. Because, man, like, sometimes they show up to save somebody and they hit somebody on their way in. Man, you're a job creator. Definitely.
Okay, we're going to need another ambulance. Just an endless cycle.
No, don't call another one. This is twice the time that I get to work here. We'll take this guy, come back for him. Yeah. Who knows? There might be a third.
He might be dead. I had responded to our Facebook post with a picture of the Apprentice PC game, which is just a little too real because we are all NPCs in that game.
What if you had to be Donald Trump?
What if you had to be on the other? What if you had to be on the other end?
I don't know who you're playing.
I don't know who you're playing either.
I guess you're playing The Apprentice.
You know, maybe this is a big old tie back to Telltale because you're fired.
anybody remember Dungeon Keeper?
Oh, I was thinking about that.
What a cruel game to be an NPC.
There's demons spilling out of the mountain. Okay.
Even if you're the guy, like, helping the actual player. He's still just beating you around randomly and throwing you against walls.
I would just want to be the hand.
Well, that's the player.
Is it?
Yeah, that's not the NPC.
Or are you just
guiding
you?
Oh. Yeah. Well, then you can't do anything.
I'm thinking about
I don't know, you're the dungeon keeper.
What if you're a nice hand and you don't want to slap those guys around? And you're just being forced to slap.
The game is called Dungeon Keeper.
In Darkest Dungeon, I was thinking, like, maybe I wouldn't want to be an NPC there, but it's only the playable characters that live horrible, horrible
That's
lives.
True. The NPCs don't have to go.
They're only
the
NPCs
dungeon.
When you abandon them because they're too broken to fix. Which is just the cruelest thing of all.
That's true. Sorry, your mind is broken. You're out of here.
Dude, the only people who do survive in that game are the NPCs. The people who live in the town and never, ever leave. Everyone who leaves the town, man, it's bad news bears. And then, of course, last week brought this up because when I was playing Marvel for half an hour at my buddy's, it really was like 15 muggers mugging one dude. And it's just like, yo, can you walk down the street without getting mugged here? Like, I can make some jokes about New York, but damn, this place is violent. What else did we have? We had people started posting pictures, which I kind of liked. They posted artwork. They responded with artwork for games. So it was kind of a thing because you got pictures of the NPCs of the games, like, in the responses. So that was kind of fun. I enjoyed that.
All right. So question for this week. We talked a little bit about devs making changes or big or small to games and how the player base reacts, why don't you reach out and tell us your game change that you thought was just really brutal and would ruin a game. And maybe it was right, or maybe you were right about it, and maybe you were wrong. You can hit us up via the Heroes Podcast Facebook. You can find GGKC on Facebook as well, or our Twitter, GG
_Kansas_City.
Or, of course, our website at gg-kc.com.
We're getting more active on Twitter. Gamer Heroes, Derek, who you guys all know, he's more active on the Gamer Heroes tag. Or what the heck? Obviously, I don't use Twitter.
Call sign.
Yeah, call sign.
Goose.
But I'm finally, we're picking up to be more active on Twitter and stuff too. I do admit that I'm a Facebook junkie myself. So yeah, if you're in the Twitter sphere, hit us up on Heroes Podcast or at GGKC and let us know what's up.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today. Had a good time.
Our music is Life Formed.
By Lifeform, the album is Fast Fall. You definitely should go pick up that album.
It's a cool game, too.
Yeah, find it all over the internet. Bandcamp. Yes, indeed, even a SoundCloud. But also SoundCloud. Spotify and other avenues. Thanks for joining us.
See ya.